Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Glenn Moberg, and today we celebrate the year 2008. It is our year-end review show on Route 51 as we look back at the people, places, and politics that made North Central Wisconsin a special part of our lives this past year, for better and for worse. We'll look back at some of the top stories we've covered. We'll hear from many of the interesting guests who graced our Wisconsin Public Radio airwaves. We'll hear highlights of the public forums and debates we sponsored. We'll revisit the sometimes nutty, sometimes heartwarming feature stories of the past year. And we'll listen to some of the live music we shared with you from the artists who came to our Wisconsin Public Radio studios in Wausau. Above all, 2008 was an election year. And the Wausau area saw appearances by both Republican presidential candidate John McCain and First Lady-elect Michelle Obama. John McCain made a stopover in September at Central Wisconsin Airport in Mosinee at a time when the polls were close and it looked like he could still win in Wisconsin.
This is about the seventh or eighth time that pundits have said McCain's campaign's in trouble. We fooled them then and we'll fool them again, and and I'm telling you, my friends, we'll win the state of Wisconsin with your help. We will win it here, and I know we will.
And a week after McCain's appearance, Michelle Obama made a stop over in Wausau at the UW Marathon County Theater, where she talked to a group of working women, and she joked about her own background and her husband's rapid rise in fortune.
Several years ago, we finally paid off our student loans, and that's only because Barack wrote two best-selling books. The challenges that these women and families are facing are typical of what is happening all across America. Something is broken, and it needs to be fixed.
Also in September, the political odd couple, Democratic strategist James Carville and Republican strategist Mary Madeline, appeared at the Wisconsin Public Radio-sponsored Reuter Forum at the Grand Theater in Wausau. Carville and Madeline have somehow not let their political differences get in the way of their marriage vows. At the time we interviewed them on Route 51, John McCain had just picked Sarah Palin as his running mate. He was ahead in the polls, and Obama was in trouble in the midst of charges of negative campaigning.
They were making fun of her being a mayor, and so she said the best way to get a point across is to do it with a smile on your face. Well, maybe they don't like my being a mayor. Maybe they don't understand what it is. It's kind of like a community organizer, except you have real responsibilities. Well, they don't like that.
Mary, you're from
respond to that.
You're from Chicago. Why the put down of community organizers? These are people, you know, I'm not just talking about Barack Obama, but people on the South Side who are working to try to improve the lives of in some cases, millions of people who are trapped in abject poverty.
That was not a twist, and I take complete objection and issue with your characterization of that, which I recognize is the way they're characterizing it. She was responding to their putting her down as a mayor, whom my husband infamously said, went on TV and said and held up a picture of the mayor's office and said it looks like a bait shop, thereby insulting small towns, mayors, and fishermen, all in one fell swoop.
You know, Obama is now chasing something down about us all today that, just, well, he said it was lipstick on a pig, and they find that offensive. Every day, Republican strategists get up and they say, what can we do today to distract people from, when they think about this election, to think about what's happened to the health care, what's happened to energy costs, what's happened to the deficit, the fact that our suicide rates among our soldiers is now higher than the general population, given the fact that our currency is weak. What is it that we can do today to distract people from that?
How much trouble are Barack Obama and the Democrats in right now?
Well, they could, if they allow this election to get away from them, and by that I mean if they don't bring it back to a central, relentless focus, they could be in some trouble.
The political odd couple, James Carville and Mary Madeline, as we look at the best of 2008 on Route 51. The presidential campaign brought national attention to a local family from Merrill who became a focal point in the debate over the war in Iraq. Ryan Jopek had lost his life in that conflict, and his mother, Tracy, had given Barack Obama his military bracelet to wear. When Barack Obama gave his victory speech after the Wisconsin primary, a national television audience saw the bracelet.
We're here because of the mother that I met in Green Bay, Wisconsin, who gave me this bracelet that I'm wearing.
The mother is Tracy Jopek of Merrill. The bracelet is inscribed with the name of her son, Ryan, who was killed at the age of 20 by a roadside bomb in Iraq. Ryan's younger sister, Jessica, was with her mom when she gave the bracelet to Obama.
She knows that Ryan didn't die in vain, and she just wanted him to know that the war is real. Now he's only a memory, and, you know, there's so many families out there who have suffered, and for what reason? It's really hard to find a good reason.
Jessica Jopek was watching when Obama used that bracelet with Ryan's name to make a point about the war.
We are here because it is time to ask ourselves as a nation if we are serving Ryan and his compatriots and all our young, brave men and women as well as they are serving us. They need us to end this war.
Some of Jessica's friends were watching, too.
Even if some of my friends say that he's just wearing the bracelet to get my vote, well, he's got my vote. I thought it was really awesome, and the fact that he's used it in more than one speech is just even better.
On Tuesday, 19-year-old Jessica Jopek of Merrill went to the polls for the first time. She voted for Barack Obama. I'm Glenn Moberg for Wisconsin Public Radio News. 2 weeks after that story on Route 51, we marked the fifth anniversary of the Iraq War with a return appearance of Ryan Jopek's father, Staff Sergeant Brian Jopek of the National Guard. He said on the program that Obama had been asked to no longer wear his son's bracelet, and the controversy ended up making Route 51 and our interview part of the national debate over the presidential campaign. Here's what the national media didn't cover, what Brian Jopek said on the program about his son's death and the lack of sacrifice on the part of the American public.
I not only think about, you know, my son, but I think about them all, you know. It all hits pretty hard, especially after it happens to you. I mean, I've always taken Veterans Day very seriously, Memorial Day very seriously, but when it happens to you, it brings it home that much more. It's one of those deals where I can honestly tell somebody else that I do know what they're going through. I mean, I can honestly say that.
I'm going to ask a philosophical question then. How can we ask so few to sacrifice so much while the American people as a whole are not being asked to sacrifice at all?
Being over there, being in a combat zone, coming back home, knowing that stuff is still going on, and then seeing people get all wrapped up in stuff like American Idol and things like that. You know, sure, you have your groups, you have your family support groups and other, you know, church groups and that sort of thing, doing things for troops. But the American public as a whole, now, when you sit back and look at it, I would say that there's not a whole heck of a lot of sacrifice going on.
Staff Sergeant Brian Jopek on the fifth anniversary of the Iraq War and the loss of his son, Ryan Jopek of Merrill, on Route 51. The war was also front and center during the political debate that we sponsored and held at the Rose Garden in Wausau. It was the 7th District Congressional Candidates Debate, the only one between longtime Democrat Dave Obey and Republican challenger Dan Milkey, who squared off on the subject of Iraq, on the economy, and on the question of civil liberties.
If we do not inject significant amounts of funding into the economy right now, we're going to see a very deep, very prolonged recession.
Borrowing got us into this mess. Lending to people that cannot afford to pay it back created this mess. And Mr. Obey talks about his stimulus package. He should have done that 39 years ago for the 7th District.
Herbert Hoover's answer was the same as Mr. Milkey's. Do nothing.
Smart man.
Don't inject Herbert Hoover. We've got a real different view of history.
Obviously.
The idea that progressive taxation is socialistic is preposterous. Bob La Follette invented the idea.
Spreading the wealth.
But I would not be surprised to see Mr. Milkey call it socialist, since he's already called me a traitor because I have the temerity to question
the
jump war.
I said anyone who speaks negatively about the troops aids and abets the enemy or
about the troops.
When you undermine the war, you are undermining the troops.
I think it is an abomination that our government has become a defender of torture on the world stage. I think it is absolutely an abomination. And Senator McCain was correct to speak out against it, as did Senator Obama.
I am opposed to the Patriot Act. Anytime you put the power to take away our rights and freedoms into the hands of government, it's abused. They're using that power wrongly. I'm opposed to the Patriot Act.
Democrat Dave Obey, Republican Dan Mielke, in their only joint appearance, the debate that we sponsored at the Rose Garden. About a week later, we caught up with both candidates again on election night. The room full of Democrats at the Wausau Labor Temple erupted in applause with the news that Barack Obama had won Ohio and the presidency. Dave Keefe and Linda Freeman Grilli were ecstatic.
Great to be a part of history and witness history so close up and be alive. It's a great day to be alive.
For me, it's a hope for my kids and my grandkids that we will truly make a change from where we have been.
And for the man of the hour, victorious longtime Democratic Congressman Dave Obey, the change can't come fast enough.
You cannot approach this economy like Herbert Hoover. Herbert Hoover thought that you had to retrench and do less. This government is going to have to step up and stimulate the economy, or we will see unemployment go to record numbers.
The man Obey defeated, Republican Dan Mielke, sat in the somber Republican headquarters across town and predicted that things would not go smoothly for Obama and the Democrats, even with their newfound majorities.
They're in trouble. Everything that happens is going to fall on their shoulders, and they're going to have to deal with it.
Mielke warned the Democrats against trying to move the country to the left too quickly. But back at the Labor Temple, Dave Obey was having none of that talk.
Left, schmeft, up, down, I think all that talk is nonsense. We need action and action now.
And Obey, who chairs the powerful House Appropriations Committee, is in a position to push an action-filled agenda. In Wausau, I'm Glenn Mobert for Wisconsin Public Radio News. You are listening to the year-end review, the best of 2008 on Route 51, regional talk radio on the Ideas Network.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, formerly Fiserv Health, providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
You are listening to the year-end review show for Route 51, regional talk radio for North Central Wisconsin. I'm Glenn Moberg. The year 2008 saw the beginning of many stories and the end of one. In July, a house was demolished in the city of Crandon, a house where six young people were shot to death by an off-duty sheriff's deputy. We were there as the community honored and remembered the victims and tried to put the past behind them. More than 300 people stood in the pouring rain on the streets of this small Northwoods community, staring for the last time at the yellow wood frame house that had darkened their lives.
I don't come by here unless I have to.
Lee Smith was able to muster a smile as she remembered her son Aaron and his silly nickname, Chunk.
Just looking at his pictures when he was little, he was a chunk. Big cheeks, you know, a little chunky. But, you know, after he got out of high school, he grew up, he got tall.
Aaron Smith was one of six young people who lost their lives that terrible night in October, gunned down by an off-duty police officer they had considered one of their own. Lee Smith looked again at the house where it happened.
You know, once the house is gone, we can maybe move forward a little bit. We're never going to get over it, but we have to do what we have to do.
Fred Ackley of the Mole Lake Chippewa looked at the sky and said that the Great Spirit was crying. Pastor Bill Farr was also choking back tears.
Remember their laughter. Remember their life. And as this house is demolished tomorrow, we will chase the black cloud of darkness and despair surrounding it away.
On Saturday morning, the house would be gone, to be replaced by a memorial for the six young people who took a part of this close-knit community with them. In Crandon, I'm Glenn Moberg for Wisconsin Public Radio News. 2008 also marked the passing of one of the great leaders of Wisconsin, former governor and UW-Stevens Point Chancellor Lee Sherman Dreyfus. We devoted a full hour to Dreyfus on Route 51. Among our guests, Lee's personal assistant, Mary Williams, and her husband, Bob, the Republican political strategist who managed his campaign for governor.
Yes, and Mary was right there. She was running his office at the time when the governor of Colorado came to see him with his full retinue of stiff shirt guys from Colorado, and they came in, and finally got around to it, and he said to Lee, "The plan is, Lee, we're going to run a 42-inch pipe from Superior, Wisconsin to Denver, and we're going to pipe water from Lake Superior. We need it a lot more than you do. And Lee really surprised him by saying, Governor, you can have all the water you want from Wisconsin in a 42-inch pipe, but we're going to have to add hops and barley and put it in aluminum cans and send it to you. It ended the conversation, and Lee was thought of as a smart aleck by the governor of Colorado, but I thought it was a wonderful rejoinder.
Political strategist Bob Williams remembering Lee Sherman Dreyfus on the Route 51 year-end review show. This past year, as the economy melted down, we got the observations of another Wisconsin Republican legend, former Defense Secretary and Congressman Melvin Laird of Marshfield.
Congress is somewhat responsible because they are the oversight body, and they went along with some things that I think they shouldn't have gone along with, and it's caused a tremendous crisis. Yes, the executive branch failed too, but the Congress has the oversight responsibility, and I don't think they exercised it properly.
I've been listening to commentators who are both conservative and liberals. The conservatives say the Democrats used Fannie and Freddie to get home loans to people who couldn't pay them back. And the Democrats, including Barack Obama, say it's Republican support for laissez-faire free market economics that's to blame, all the deregulation, and they're drawing a parallel with Herbert Hoover before the Great Depression. What do you think of that?
I don't think that's a very good comparison. I feel that the Congress likes to escape its responsibility for exercising oversight, but it never should.
Former Defense Secretary and Congressman Melvin Laird of Marshfield. There are also some heartwarming and touching memories last year on Route 51 on Valentine's Day, when we brought together two local couples who had each been married for more than 50 years, Phil and Margaret Karspeckin, and Rose and Walter John Chilson, each recalling the day that they first met.
I scooted to my room so I could turn on the radio with Eventide Echoes. And it was poetry and a wonderful voice. And when I heard that voice in the hospital room, I knew it was the same voice.
The same voice you heard. Walter John, what were you doing reading a newspaper in your mother's room at Holy Cross Hospital?
I was actually reciting poetry, rehearsing How Do I Love Thee, Let Me Count the Ways.
And what year was that?
Oh, gosh, what year was that? 1949, I think. Mm-hmm. We courted for quite a while. The old story about a man chases a girl until she catches him prevailed pretty much.
I think all three of the males in this room can probably attest to that. Phil and Margaret, where were you when you first met?
We're native Iowa Hawkeyes, but we grew up many miles apart. But we happened to go to the same college at the same time in 1938, Cornell College of Iowa. And we met during freshman week there, and we met at a party. So the next day I called her and got a date. They called them dates in those days. And that's how it all started.
And I never let go.
Phil and Margaret Karspeckin and Walter John and Rose Chilson on Valentine's Day last year. One of the things we enjoy doing on Route 51 is bringing you live music on the air, and the year 2008 saw some great performances. Later this hour, we'll be hearing from our favorite classical group, the South Beach Chamber Ensemble, and from bluesman Otis McLennan. But first, jazz violinist Randy Sabine, who brought his violin into our Wausau studio, and he even let me accompany him on guitar.
So you're going to be like Django Reinhardt,
and
I'll be like Stefan Grappelli.
Well, let's see.
The Hot Club of Merrill.
Sweet Georgia Brown.
All right, let it rip. Thank you.
know you were such a great guitar player, man. I should be interviewing you.
I don't think so.
Jazz violinist Randy Sabine and yours truly performing live on the air back in January on Route 51. I'm Glenn Moberg. We'll be back with more of the best of 2008 after this. I'm Glenn Moberg. You're listening to the Year-End Review Show, the best of Route 51 regional talk radio on the Ideas Network. In August, bluesman Otis McLennan joined us live on the air with his guitar and his original composition, the Blue State Blues.
Everybody loves me, so I'm told. My daddy's name is as good as gold. He got me into Yale, kept me out of Vietnam, but man, what a fix I'm in. The Wizard of Oz is really Dick Cheney. This was all his plan. You can't really blame me. I was only doing as I was told. Man, what a fix I'm in. This ain't a war about oil production. We'll find those weapons of mass destruction. Conservatives don't need to conserve. We're gonna make a killing in the Arctic Reserve. I don't believe in evolution or global warming. All that science tends to bore me. Don't burden me with all of the facts. I shoot from the hip and I never look back. I shoot from the hip, I never look back. That's how I got us into Iraq. Red states, blue states, playing for some high stakes. And man, what a fix I'm in. Red states, blue states, playing for some high stakes. And man, what a fix I'm in.
Otis McLennan, some blue state blues there.
Yeah, a little blue cheese.
Bluesman Otis McLennan joining us live on the air on the best of 2008, Route 51, the year in review. One of the musical events we covered last year was the 50th anniversary of the appearance of a legendary rock and roller, Buddy Holly, at a legendary venue, the Pavilion in Rothschild, saved by community volunteers from the wrecking ball and welcoming back one of the original members of Holly's band. Tommy Alsop is alive today only because he lost a coin toss with fellow rocker Richie Valens.
Well, I didn't get on the plane. I flipped a coin with Richie Valens at the last minute. I just reached in my pocket and pulled out a 50-cent piece and flipped it. He called heads, so I went back out and told Buddy. I said, Richie's going to my place.
That coin toss saved Tommy Alsop's life on the night Buddy Holly's plane crashed and the music died. On Saturday, Alsop stood outside the Rothschild Pavilion 50 years to the day that he and Holly played there.
Got to town, and at the motel, they slashed the tires on Buddy's Lincoln, so we had to run down a set of tires. Then they had a bunch of logs here behind the building, tried to balance themselves on those logs, and we all went in the water. I remember that very well.
Do you think of Buddy a lot still?
Oh, yeah, every day.
You won't matter anymore. Tommy Alsop!
Alsop and frontman Johnny Rogers played before hundreds of people Saturday who still think of Buddy, including many who were at the Pavilion back on July 12, 1958. Judy Oestreich of Ringel was 17 when she sang on stage with Holly's opening act.
I never thought I'd make it this far, I'll tell you, but it's awesome. They've done a wonderful job with this building, and I'm just so happy that they're having the tribute tonight.
Rothschild's Pavilion was almost torn down, but was saved by a grassroots effort to preserve its history. On Sunday, a second Holly reunion concert was held at another historic venue, the Crystal Rock in Rhinelander. I'm Glenn Moberg for Wisconsin Public Radio News. You are listening to the Year-End Review Show, the best of 2008, on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. While the Pavilion played host to many musical acts, other venues in North Central Wisconsin played host to a number of forums and debates sponsored by Route 51. The Campanile Center in Minocqua was the scene of a live broadcast, a debate between 12th District State Senate candidate Democrat Jim Holprin and Republican Tom Tiffany. They squared off on the perennial issues of taxing and spending.
Less is more. No tax increases, less regulation, less litigation gives us all more. Spend that revenue more wisely. The taxpayers are tapped here in Wisconsin. We have tightened our belts. State government has to do the same.
As I talk to business people here in northern Wisconsin, it's not the tax load that concerns them primarily at all. Roads to get their products to market, broadband and high-speed internet so they can communicate like 21st century businesses should. And they're looking for good education systems in the communities where they're located.
We're funding pork barrel things like hockey rinks for Green Bay and Eau Claire. A subsidy for a privately owned daycare center, building a hotel for the UW system in Madison. There's waste in that state government budget. We need to root it out. And that way we can spend within the taxpayers' means.
It's easy to talk about a hockey rink in Green Bay and cutting services, but to be really responsible and to be serious about it, you have to get at the big five programs that drive 80% of the cost of government in this state.
Tom, where would you make cuts in those big five programs?
And I think they need to set priorities. As a small businessman, that's exactly what I've done.
Democrat Jim Holprin narrowly won that contest, defeating Republican Tom Tiffany for the 12th District State Senate seat. Route 51 also brought you a big event for local assembly races at UW-Marathon County with our media partners, the Wausau Daily Herald and WAOW-TV9. At the forum at UW-Marathon County, we brought together assembly candidates Donna Seidel and Jess Kufall, Jerry Petruski and Nate Mishka, and Scott Suter and Tim Swigum. Now, much of the discussion involved the topic of health care, and incumbent Republican Suter and Swigum, the Democratic mayor of Owen, were on opposite sides of a heated exchange.
The farmers are paying right now, most that I talk to, are paying $500 a month, $20,000 deductible. So they don't go to the doctor. They're not going to go to the doctor because they have to pay the first $20,000 out of their pocket. It's outrageous, and it's correct that the farmers, this is their number one issue. They're not getting health care because it's all out of their pocket.
Gentlemen, you both have 3 minutes.
I understand we have a disagreement on healthy Wisconsin, but the fact is, covers illegal aliens, covers abortions. It's a $15 billion payroll tax. It's the last thing the state needs is the government in charge of your health care. The government's going to not only run your health care, they're going to tell you what prescriptions you get, where you go, what doctor you choose, and
none of that is included in the plan. I don't know where Scott Suter reads that, and the illegal aliens, I don't recall reading that in there either.
I've got a legislative council memorandum that says it covers illegal aliens. I've got 50 questions that I asked him a long time ago. Please answer these questions.
Scott, you don't even speak to me. What do you mean you asked me? He won't even look at me in public.
50 questions, Tim. Here you go.
Republican Scott Suter, who defeated Democrat Tim Swigum, debating the topic of health care at a Route 51 political forum. I'm Glenn Moberg. You are listening to the Best of 2008, the Route 51 year-end review show. A major topic of concern in state and local politics is our overcrowded jail system and our broken criminal justice system, which were the subject of a series of forums sponsored by the Wisconsin Institute of Public Policy and Service at UW-Marathon County. Route 51 tackled that issue, too, with a show that featured Marathon County Administrator Mort McBain and District Attorney Jill Falstead and a La Crosse County Judge, John Perlich, who has challenged the basic assumptions of the system.
Some kid in the dorm smoking a joint who gets busted, we probably shouldn't even put that person in the system. Give them a citation if you want. Send them on his way.
How many drug users and alcohol abusers are in the jail right now taking up prison space?
Of all the people incarcerated in jails, about 75% of those people have underlying alcohol or drug issues. And sometimes it's not just the alcohol and drugs. It's kind of a chicken and an egg problem. We have people who constantly abuse alcohol and also commit crimes. And we wind up trying to figure out if they're committing crimes because they're drunk or they're drunk because they have no money or whatever it is.
Well, and what we've actually found is that this isn't a one-time event for them, that they were smoking a joint once and got caught. They're very chronic, repeat drug users. So actually, we believe we're affording intervention and treatment at a good point.
Judge Perlich, do you think there's ever a time that a casual marijuana user should be put in jail?
When you're talking about low-risk offenders, every study that has ever been done has clearly indicated that if you bring low-risk offenders, whether it's drugs or anything, into the system, you make them worse. You don't make them better.
La Crosse County Judge John Perlich, Marathon County District Attorney Jill Falstead, and County Administrator Mort McBain, who retired this past year, on Route 51 as we continue our year-end review show. I'm Glenn Moberg. We'll be back in a minute.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include attorney Paul A. Sturgill, serving the legal needs of the elderly and their families throughout Wisconsin and Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Toll-free information is at 888-613-0600.
I'm Glenn Moberg, and you are listening to the Best of 2008, the Route 51 Year-End Review Show on the Ideas Network. One of the most interesting and stimulating events we held this past year was a collaboration with the Good News Project of Wausau, an organization that marked its 25th year of providing outreach and assistance to impoverished communities in the Caribbean. We held a forum on religious service at UW-Marathon County Theater on the meaning of mission with Bishop Gabriel Malzer of the Island of Dominica, the Reverend Stephen Wright of Wausau's First Presbyterian Church, Father Patrick McCorkle, a Jesuit priest from Minnesota, and Rabbi Dan Danson of Wausau's Mount Sinai congregation. Rabbi Danson said the word mission is not well received by many non-Christians.
Mission had a strong association with, while there was going out to do good works, there was in service, there was also an element of trying to bring non-Christians to Christianity. When you're the non-Christian on the receiving end of that, it's not always a welcome moment. Especially if you have a proud tradition.
I do want to open this up to our panelists, and I want to specifically have them address why the word mission might have negative connotations to some groups, primarily because of the evangelical element associated with it. And anybody who wants to take that can take it.
I think the whole thing that is a little more disturbing to most people when we speak of mission is what we call proselytizing. The question of conversion is not something that we can stop. You know, people get converted. If something good is happening in any group, there is the possibility that someone will join. So I do not see the problem with that. In fact, it is a kind of situation that happens naturally.
Reverend Wright?
There's no question that there have been some terrible abuses, terrible behavior under the guise of spreading the gospel, historically. There's no doubt about that. It's justified racist activity, ethnic slaughter in some cases, forced conversions of whole masses of people. But my perception is that the Christian view of mission, at least in Western and Northern countries, has changed. In my tradition currently, the point of mission is not spiritual evangelism. It is to make people whole.
Participants of a forum on the meaning of mission as we continue with the Best of 2008, the year-end review show on Route 51, Regional Talk Radio. This past year, Wisconsin Public Radio and the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service sponsored an hour-long documentary on the struggle of the Hmong community in Wisconsin. And along the way, we brought you the highest-ranking elected Hmong official in the nation. We introduced you to Mi Mua, a state senator from Minnesota.
There's a reddish-pinkish band of stone around the top of the third floor there, a thin band. That's pipestone.
Politicians hustle past a tour group under the opulent Minnesota State Capitol Dome. Among the most important is a person who sometimes feels out of place, the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee and the highest elected Hmong official in America, Senator Mi Mua.
When I walk into this magnificent building, I have this weird out-of-body experience that in another parallel universe, I am, you know, strapping a big basket onto my back and walking barefoot on a dirt path to the rice paddies.
That parallel universe is Mi Mua's childhood home, half a world away in the jungles of Laos and two centuries removed from the present.
We lived deep in the mountains in a bamboo hut with thatch roof. We cooked by firelight, no running water, no electricity. But more important than the village in Laos, you know, I lived for almost 3 years in a refugee camp in Thailand.
It was the late 70s, and the 8-year-old Mua had fled with her family to the Ban Vinai camp, where she lived on a dirt floor and played in a garbage dump. Her father had been a medic, helping the U.S. in the Vietnam War. It was the family's ticket out to a different world.
It was very hard, but I think that I am blessed to have come to the United States when I was only 9. You know, I grew up poor, and we never went on vacations. We never went anywhere. But every Saturday, I would spend hours and hours at the public library where I was transported to worlds that I had never been before.
And soon, she would be transported to the world of state politics.
In case you don't know, we are here to put the first Hmong women in the Minnesota State Senate.
It was January of 2002, a special primary election for a vacant Senate seat on St. Paul's east side. Mi Mua was an improbable long shot, one of four Democrats competing in a blue-collar, predominantly white district. But she showed a knack for politics and organization.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Fine.
My name is Mi Mua.
I know who you are.
Good.
Yes, and I'm glad you're running.
Mua and her supporters went door to door, distributing 20,000 pieces of literature and registering hundreds of new voters. At a Hmong New Year celebration, she attracted the attention, if not the endorsement, of a powerful mentor, U.S. Senator and progressive icon, Paul Wellstone.
Here's what I would say. That's okay. I would say she's wonderful. She's great.
On election day, a shaman prayed with incense and divined the future over the horns of a bull. The prediction, Mi Mua would win, and defying the odds, she did.
Those of us who are very recently immigrated to this country, we have, I think, the deepest appreciation because the contrast is so stark. And that deeper appreciation translates into a very, very fierce sense of patriotism that it could only happen in this country. People ask me facetiously whether or not I want to be president one day, and that's such a compliment. But technically, you know, I can't qualify to be president because I was not born in this country.
All right, so presidency is out. How about governor? You want to be governor?
Oh, you know, I really enjoy policymaking at the state level, and I guess, you know, most young people say that you never say no. Even contemplating being governor of the state of Minnesota is not out of the question.
Mi Mua wants a new generation of Hmong leaders to know that for all of them, nothing is out of the question. And that segment was part of Wisconsin Public Radio's documentary on the Hmong experience in the central part of America, Bridging the Shores. Well, what would a Route 51 year-end review show be without our unofficial mascot, the Prairie Chicken? Each year, we travel to the Buena Vista Grasslands and the Mead Wildlife Center near Plover in order to bring you the unofficial start of spring, the Prairie Chicken Festival. This year was no different. Tom Meyer, project supervisor at the Mead Wildlife Area, teaches a group of grade school kids how to stomp and boom like prairie chickens.
On the count of three, here we go. Oh, you guys are excellent.
The youngsters are learning from the experts, like Bob Welch, a science teacher at Wapaka Middle School.
And then, of course, then they go, whoop, whoop, whoop.
Welch has been involved with the Prairie Chicken Festival for the past 3 years at the Mead and the nearby Buena Vista Marsh in Portage County, teaching kids how to hold and band songbirds and release them into the wild.
You got it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now we're going to turn your bird over like that, open up your hand, and then we're going to turn this direction.
To Welch, the festival is not just fun and games. It's a chance to unplug children and their parents from a high-tech virtual world that he thinks is keeping them from what's important.
If kids need all these things, iPods, cell phones, who's going to pay for them? The parent. And if they just make a living and spend that time with their kids, the kids wouldn't need any of these things because they have their parents instead.
Author Justin Isherwood lives on the Buena Vista Marsh, where he says families can still experience a land that is basic and primal.
It still belongs largely to nature. There are places in the Buena Vista Marsh where it's as if the glacier just retreated a few minutes before.
A place where the wild prairie chickens still call out to children and their parents. In Millidor, I'm Glenn Moberg for Wisconsin Public Radio News. And that Prairie Chicken Festival in Millidor is one of the events that we cover every year for Wisconsin Public Radio. And this past year, 2008, was no different. I'm Glenn Moberg. I want to thank you for joining us for our year-end review show on Route 51, Regional Talk Radio. Special thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our news director, Michael Leland, and to Wisconsin Public Radio's Phil Corvo. Tonight, we leave you with the best of the best, an appearance by our favorite classical group, the South Beach Chamber Ensemble, which made its annual pilgrimage to Wausau from Miami Beach this past July and performed at a free live broadcast at the UW Marathon County Theater. Here's the South Beach Chamber Ensemble live in concert with a portion of a minuet by Hummel. Good night, everyone.